What does that stand for? Well, let me just fill you in here, friends. In the long, bloody, and often contrived war against Donald Trump, the left has used many methods and proxies to push its fight. In many instances and in various ways, the elites have gone after Trump for refusing to play their game. Commentators have been every bit as much in the tank as any leftist mandarins in terms of the fact that Trump must leave the race and now, and then predicting his demise, his immediate demise. And how has that worked out so far? The lady who charged Trump and then quit Breitbart when she wasn't supported or Trump's advisor in a snit was obviously some kind of feminist plant who claimed Corey Lewandowski had assaulted her. Unfortunately, the entire incident occurring in a crowded venue was captured on film. And rolling back the tape, we see Lewandowski behind her and nothing happens. Her, which according to him was keeping folk away from Trump, did not even cause her to turn around. But she expected her entire organization to oppose Trump and then charges to be filed. And now they've decided that they're not going to charge Corey Lewandowski. Now we have a member of the RNC Rules Committee stating if Trump enters Cleveland with 1,100 delegates, he's in. He's the delegate. He's the representative. Pardon me. Finally, the GOP appears to be understanding after Colorado that the national body of Republicans and conservatives is infuriated beyond fury by the supposed attempt to purify the GOP when the grand old party itself is a corrupt old boys club. Now, can we say with only 1,100 needed that Trump will win? Well, it's too early to say, but at least the GOP has apparently backed off laying any more political IEDs for a few days. Stay tuned, sports fans. Okay, well, we do have some big news there, as I suggest. For some reason, a member of the Rules Committee decided that they were going to admit what is apparently the obvious, that if Trump comes in and he's got the vast majority of delegates, that there's not going to be any stopping him. And so I don't know. I mean, you would have to assume that this gentleman was told by somebody in the GOP that 1,100 was the magic number. So instead of 1,237, I believe is the, so that's 137 less than what was needed. It's very interesting. It's all very interesting, of course. And it's not really clear necessarily what the purpose of that or the genesis of that was, but I think I can tell you this, that if Trump needs just 1,100, I think he's going to get there because it's that close. And other than that, I don't see that Ted Cruz has got a lot of game to completely shut him down. There's not going to be any more Colorados where somebody comes in and takes all the votes without any kind of an actual formal vote. Number one, because I don't think any of the other states is set up that way. But number two, I don't think the GOP can afford to take any more of these, basically, you want to call it these body blows. I mean, people want democracy. They want their vote to count. They want to know some support, some actual delegates or whatever. They don't want to hear that they wanted to be involved, but that the powers that be have decided that their vote's not going to matter because of some abstruse rule. And I just think that's to the party's benefit. You're not going to put out there the idea that individuals state by state can go out and vote. And then, oh, by the way, we forgot to tell you that, for example, Colorado can decide where its delegates go in an undertaking that takes 10 seconds per delegate, which is absolutely ridiculous. Once again, it's not about supporting Trump, which I have not decided who I'm going to vote for yet. I'll have to see who's available, but I can tell you that the more attacks on Trump that occur, the more it's likely that the average go out and vote for him, because, you know, people don't want, they don't want their vote to go down the toilet. And you can be involved in this process. And by the way, the process doesn't mean anything. So you can get out of the game. Anyway, my computer just stopped. So I do have a bunch of stuff for you on this morning. And I believe James Dickens is going to be coming in a little bit later. All right. The computer just resurfaced. It was down to 20,000 leagues below the ocean, but see if I can find this. This clip here for you. I don't know what it would be like to have like a functional computer on the show. But anyway, let's take a little break here and we'll come back and I'll have some of these clips for you. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 613 on the 14th of the fourth month, April 14th. And I've got a little celebration of the Warriors, but I've got a little explication on this 1100 number. We'll be back. 620. And it's a little bit warmer out there this morning. And I've got for your temperature right now, 51 degrees. All right. So this was a stunning statement, and I don't know how it plays out, but I have to think that this guy, Randy Evans, who's from the Georgia Party, and the generally speaking, the Rules Committee and these super Republicans, I think they take one from each state for the Rules Committees, but I can't imagine that this guy gets up on his own on national TV and says Trump can get there by 1100 without some backing. And so I'm wondering if the GOP is not finally coming to their senses and saying this is a PR disaster. People are very frustrated with the process, with the situation in America, with the international American situation, with the national American situation. And people are increasingly feeling like the government is making decisions without any input from the people. And we've got a commander in chief who specializes in that. And now the GOP is going to take all of the votes away from millions of Colorado voters. This looks terrible. But anyway, here's what this gentleman said. And it's Randy Evans, and he's a former Newt Gingrich backer.
What I do expect to happen is this, is that if Donald Trump exceeds 1,100 votes, he will become the nominee, even though he may not have 1,237. If he gets less than 1,000 delegates, then I think we're looking at a contested convention that could go on for many, many days. And then in the middle, there's that gray area between 1,000 and 1,100. And that's where the unbound delegates or the delegates that have been released by other candidates come into play to see if there are enough of those to get either Cruz or Trump over the finish line.
All right. So I think, without knowing too much about what's going on, I think that Trump can get to 1,100. He could get to 1,237, but what happened in Colorado, which if you've been following the news the last couple of days, they went in there and through this kind of arcane process, they initially got rid of the voting and also the caucus. And then it was done by committee, some sort of committee rules. The outcome was to give every single delegate to Ted Cruz. And that's really not good, because this is a time when the GOP has to be aware of the desperate desire of grassroots Republicans and conservatives to be involved in the process. And a lot of these RNC guys have gotten up and made smart aleck comments along the lines of the vote doesn't matter, what the national committee decides. That's where we get our candidates from. And it has just further tarnished the brand of the GOP. And they've got to at some point pay a little attention to the national scene where on which the national nationally elected, not state or locally elected people are coming from. In other words, the GOP has to commit itself to winning general elections. The fact that they didn't do that the last two elections has meant that Obama came in and it has just done a complete disaster. He's got the worst ratings, by the way, of anybody in terms of presidents. Believe it or not, George W. Bush now has a higher favorability rating as whether he was a great president or not. Here's a little bit from Steve Kornacki on the unbound delegates in Pennsylvania, which could be Trump's secret ace in the hole.
Still has the night off. This lovely spot is the town and county resort in San Diego, California. This is where Ted Cruz, moments from now, is going to be holding a rally. The Republican presidential candidate expected to take this stage sometime in the next few minutes. This comes after a day of campaigning by Cruz all around Southern California. He had a rally this afternoon in the city of Irvine. And in one sense, you might say, this is pretty unremarkable. A presidential candidate is holding campaign events. He's doing it in a pretty big state. I guess that happens every day. But then you consider that the candidate and you consider the place. We're talking, after all, about the state of California. Now, when you look at the delegate count in California, it's a rich prize. There's 172 delegates up for grabs, but also This is a state that's not going to be holding its presidential primary for two more months, until June 7th. That is the very last day of the 2016 Republican primary race. That's when California is going to vote. There are not too many times when California, which except for one time in the last generation or so, has held its primary on the very last day. There are not too many times in modern history that California truly was able to make a difference in a Republican presidential contest. Then you consider Ted Cruz. He's the ultra-conservative candidate of evangelical Christians and social conservatives. That's who he's pitched his message to. He's competing hard to win the Golden State, a big blue state in presidential elections, in general elections. And also, Cruz might actually pull it off. Check out the latest poll in California. So Donald Trump is ahead with 39% of the vote. It actually shows Kasich in second, but it's Cruz. According to this poll, Cruz is in second place with 32% of the vote in California. And if you look even closer at the numbers in California, if you look at Los Angeles County, gigantic Los Angeles County with 10 million people in that county. If you look there, Ted Cruz is actually running ahead of Donald Trump by 11 points in Los Angeles County. Then you think about how the delegates are given out in California. They're given out by congressional district. And look at the number of congressional districts that touch Los Angeles County. It's about a third of all the districts in the state. Ted Cruz, for every congressional district he wins in California, he gets three delegates for that. Cruz could walk away from California with a hefty number of delegates, even if he loses statewide to Donald Trump, at least if the poll that we're seeing there is accurate about where his strength is. And that's how the Cruz campaign and the entire Stop Donald Trump movement plan to prevent Trump from hitting the magic number, from getting 1,237 delegates. That's the magic number he needs to win the Republican nomination on the first ballot in Cleveland and to avoid the contested convention that his opponents desperately want to bring about. In the week since Ted Cruz's big win in Wisconsin, this has largely become the accepted narrative, the idea that Cruz will succeed with this plan, that the Stop Trump movement will succeed with this plan, that Donald Trump is simply not going to be able to amass enough delegates, that the Republicans are heading to an open convention where Cruz or maybe John Kasich or maybe even Paul Ryan or someone else, where anyone besides Donald Trump could end up being the Republican nominee.
All right. So you're listening to this and trying to envision Ted Cruz coming into California and taking that. I don't see it. I think that Donald Trump's going to come back and swing back. All right. The Warriors achieved history. I think was it last night, I believe. Check this out. There's a little foreshadowing.
Warriors, come out to play.
All right, so here is here's from that record-setting final game they took on the Memphis Grizzlies.
We're not going to get any sleep. A huge night in basketball, everyone. The Golden State Warriors looking to break a 20-year NBA record, and not just any record, Michael Jordan's. And Lakers star Kobe Bryant closing out his 20-year career. Both games kicking off at the same time. Choices, choices. ABC's TJ Holmes is with here with more. Hey, Gene.
Hey, good morning. Forget politics. This is the most heated debate we have going on in the country right now. We're all divided. Jordan's 96 Bulls that won a record 72 games or Curry's 2016 Warriors that could win their 73rd tonight. Who's the greatest? Well, of course, depends on who you ask.
The NBA champion Golden State Warriors have had a nonstop record-breaking season.
Running the Clay Thompson to dunk it down!
24 straight wins to start the season. The longest ever home court winning streak at 54, and the first team to clinch a playoff spot with a whopping 2 months left in the regular season.
Curry gets it back.
And now with 72 wins, MVP Steph Curry and his Warriors have tied for the most wins in a single season. One game away from breaking a record held 20 years by the legendary 95-96 Chicago Bulls. So could the Golden State Warriors be the greatest team of all time? Bulls Hall of Famer Scottie Pippen says Golden State wouldn't stand a chance against his record-setting Chicago squad.
Bulls in four.
Bulls in four?
Yeah.
They don't get one off yet.
Others, not so sure.
Steph Curry's the babyface assassin for a reason. The brother's got heart, Skip. He's
scared of anybody.
Anything can happen.
But the Warriors have a secret weapon, their coach. Steve Kerr was on that 96 Bulls squad, but wisely told the San Francisco Gate, if the two teams played each other, there's no question that we could beat us and they could beat them. Well played, coach. Steph Curry remains coy as well.
We're doing something special, and this is a great time to be a Warrior fan.
Mm-hmm. But the hottest ticket of the night, actually Kobe's last game.
I remember when I spoke with him in November about tonight and how.
And so they did set that record, and pretty amazing, to be honest. And you can't, I mean, that's to go after Michael Jordan is obviously just about unheard of in terms of things like that. So take the hat off to them. I'm bringing up, by the way, Kobe Bryant puts in 60 points in his last game. Boy, I never really liked Kobe Bryant because he seemed like such a ball hog. But here is your record-setting game with the Warriors.
Golden State wrapping up the regular season, looking for win number 73, taking on the Memphis Grizzlies. Steph Curry on fire from the get-go. Hit a three there. Curry, the crossover, pull up, bullseye. Coming off a screen, knocks down another three. Then Curry, hand in his face. 7 three-pointers in the first half, third quarter. Andrew Bogut finding Curry. He's open, even with a man in his face. That's his 403 of the season. That's an NBA record. No other players ever hit 400 threes in a season. No other players ever hit 300 threes in a season. Warriors, 73rd win on the year. They're going to the playoffs. They'll take on the Rockets in the first round.
Incredible, huh? I won't play you any highlights from the Kobe Bryant 60 points because, like I say, not a huge fan, but I guess he was good for the league. All right, we'll take a break here and come back, and we will come back, and I'll have for you this story about the five possible outcomes of the convention with Trump and Cruz, et cetera. 6:33, and you're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 and 805-6180 to text in. I have my text machine with me, and we'll be right back.
Strong, huddled by the puddles in the shadows where the trains run. Hot ducks, wet bucks, stepping up the sidewalk, disappear and then into the police shop. Rainbow cheeks bound out by the beach, bound away from the late show. And above the whole, my bit of free fall, trying to go a lady making eyes through the smoke fall. So how people.
All right, so 636, it's about 50 degrees outside. And we've got the question of what is going to happen in this election. Yeah, on the Republican side, I really don't care what happens if Sanders wins, then there's no way he can win nationally. So I guess it does make a big difference. But here is, first of all, Napolitano to Trump, stop whining. Republican and Democratic parties are private clubs. They're not part of the government. Check this out.
Donald Trump outraged over delegates after Senator Ted Cruz took all 34 delegates in Colorado State Convention. Trump took to Twitter writing, quote, "The people of Colorado had their vote taken away from them by the phony politicians. Biggest story in politics. This will not be allowed." Trump going on to say what's happening to both he and Bernie Sanders is nothing short of corrupt.
So I watch Bernie. He wins. He keeps winning. And then I see he's got no chance. They always say he has no chance. Why doesn't he have a chance? Because the system is corrupt, and it's worse on the Republican side. I say this to the RNC, and I say it to the Republican Party. You're going to have a big problem, folks, because there are people that don't like what's going on.
Judge Andrew Napolitano joins us live right now. So, Judge, what do you make of what Mr. Trump is talking about?
Here's what the courts have said. The Republican Party is a private club. The Democratic Party is a private club. They are not the government.
Mm-hmm.
Even though when you vote in a primary, it looks like an election, it feels like an election, you use the same equipment where you go for an election,
sure,
and you go to the same place, it's not an election. It's not run by the government, and these private clubs can run their organizations however they see fit.
Yep.
The rules were...
Obviously, the answer to this is for Donald Trump to buy the club, change the rules.
Made known 8 or 9 months ago. They were available for anybody to read them.
Come on, who really looks up the state party rules?
Well, if you're going to complain that you didn't like the outcome, you ought to know what the rules are. Would I have enacted these rules? Would the court have enacted these rules? Are they consistent with fairness? Probably no.
Sure. All right, but the GOP's got a tremendous problem, and we've been talking about it on the show for a long time. And the problem is,
now.
And here is Tom Bevin, who started Real Clear Politics. I've got his five outcomes. But the problem with the GOP, either in fact or at least in appearance, and at some point there's no difference because people become convinced of things. The GOP is led by a group of elites that not only are out of touch with what the people on the ground feel, the Tea Partiers, the conservatives, the individuals who are actually make up the vast majority of GOP membership, Republicans across the nation, they feel like it's an unfair situation and that the elites not only don't care, don't know what they believe in and stand for, but they don't care and they are going to do to the harm of the party and the country whatever they feel like, and they're going to drive the vehicle off the road, as you've seen the president doing now. The problem, I believe, that people think is that the GOP elites are really not that much different from Obama, believe it or not. All right, here is your five outcomes for the convention with Trump and Cruz, et cetera, Kasich. And the possibility of Paul Ryan, who has not run in this race, for him to come out as the nominee.
Politics.com, favorite website, by the way. And he's going to tell us which one of these is actually going to happen. So which is it?
I don't know, Megan. Nobody knows. Look, I think if you look at scenario number one, I'd rate that at about 25%. 1 in 4 chance that Trump actually
wins
gets that he wins outright. And that will become a lot clearer after New York here in about 11 days. If he can stay above 50%, and sweep up a lot of those delegates, that'll boost him moving into those other East Coast primaries. And the other state to watch, incidentally, is Indiana. That's a big one that's being sort of overlooked. If Trump can win in Indiana, that'll set him up for in a pretty good position in California. And in that case, he probably would get there, but he's not going to get there by much. If he gets there, it's going to be just by a few delegates.
It's going to come down to June 7th at best for these candidates. Nobody's getting this nomination before June 7th at the earliest.
That's right. And so if you look at scenario number two, where Trump comes up short, I would give that about
yeah, so scenario
a little bit
two
higher.
Is we get to June 7th, all the voting's done, and Trump is the leader, but he doesn't have 1237. So how does he, quote, make up the difference between June 7th and the convention in late July?
Well, he's going to have to woo these delegates, like Steyerwalt was saying earlier. You know, we're going to take him out to dinner. He's going to backroom deal
Which
with him.
One?
This is, he says he's a deal maker. He's going to have to prove it. And he's hired a guy in Paul Manafort that's his expertise.
Which ones
do
they go
to?
The ones who are not bound, who are going to the convention at various states, but they're not pledged. So it's like, I don't have a partner.
Right.
I'm available. I like Mar-a-Lago.
That's right.
Right? That's
yes,
how it works.
Exactly. They're free agents. That's exactly right. And again, it's going to matter how close he gets to the number. And I would use 1,200 as sort of a break-even point. If he gets to 1,200, you know, he could probably get there. If he's under 1,200, I think it's going to be a lot harder. And it's going to also depend on how he finishes off. If he's got momentum heading into California and beyond California, I think it'll be a lot easier for him to sweep up some of these delegates. If he stumbles, you know, finishes with a whimper, it's going to be a little bit harder for him.
So we understand how it happens that, you know, Cruz would win on the second ballot and all that. But what about this other scenario where Trump and Cruz unite to give the establishment one of these? If the establishment,
right,
whoever the establishment is, just go with it, wants to pilot in a third party candidate, you think there's any chance these two men actually wind up combining for a president vice president combo?
It seems unlikely, but you know, look, we've had stranger bedfellows. I mean, JFK despised Lyndon Johnson, ended up with him on the ticket, so we've seen stuff like this happen in the past. Trace mentioned the rules, but imagine this, Megan. So Trump, I agree. He's either gets it on the first ballot or he's done. Cruz is going to have his chance to flex his delegate muscles. If he can get it on the second, if he gets denied on the second ballot, then he might be done. The longer this goes on, the more ballots that go, the more pressure is going to be on these delegates to find a compromise candidate. So the worse it's going to get, Trump and Cruz may end up on the outside looking in. So maybe perhaps on the third delegate, Cruz goes to Trump and says, hey, let's pull our delegates. We combine unified ticket. And suddenly that's how I think the small chance of that, maybe 10%. But it is definitely something that could happen.
We got to eat our Wheaties in the month of July.
All right. So that's your possibilities. But question in people's minds, if Paul Ryan is going to he's going to come in. We'll be right back and talk about that a little bit. 644, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523, 1450, and 805-618-02 text. All right, and so we've got a clip here from Paul Ryan, who, according to the New York Times, is running a campaign, a stealth campaign to become the presidential nominee. This is what he had to say about that.
That while I was overseas, there was more speculation that someone other than the current candidates will emerge as our party's nominee. I want to put this to rest once and for all. As you know, I have stayed out of this race and I have remained neutral. As chairman of the Republican convention, my job is to ensure that there is integrity in the process, that the rules are followed by the rule book. That means it is not my job to tell delegates what they should do. But I've got a message to relay today. We have too much work to do in the House to allow this speculation to swirl or to have my motivations questioned. So let me be clear. I do not want, nor will I accept the nomination for our party. So let me speak directly to the delegates on this. If no candidate has a majority on the first ballot, I believe that you should only choose from a person who has actually participated in the primary. Count me out. I simply believe that if you want to be the nominee for our party, to be the president, you should actually run for it. I chose not to do this. Therefore, I should not be considered, period, end of story. I just think it would be wrong to go any other way. So let me say again, I am not going to be our party's nominee.
All right. So, but does that mean that he's not going to be the party's nominee? The obvious question there is, and the answer to this is for some reason, this guy, Paul Ryan, who has actually been through the process, he's actually been through the process last time and he didn't win, but he was well regarded in the presidential race as the vice president. He could, I mean, there's a reason that he's putting out all these videos and trying to establish put up a profile nationally. And I believe it is where he says, I'm not running. And nobody who's not in the race right now should be considered. What would happen, though, is that there would be a divided convention. He would stand outside of it and hang around and, you know, work on his nails and look at himself in the mirror a few times. And then there's going to be a call. We need a hero to solve our problems. And here shows up Paul Ryan, who just happens to be running this video and media campaign, which nobody really understands what it's for other than being considered for the presidency. And he's clearly a guy who has a very high opinion of himself. And I'm sure that believes that he would be a good president or he wouldn't run for vice president last time. Here's George Will's reaction to this.
The RNC continues, George, to try to make it. Ryan's Priebus on Twitter last night, the rules, he was talking, I think, about Colorado. The rules were set last year. Nothing mysterious, nothing new. The rules have not changed. The rules are the same, nothing different. Setting up for what is going to be, it looks like, a really interesting ride to Cleveland.
Well, for president is hard. Because it's not one campaign, it's 56 campaigns. It's 50 states, District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, et cetera. And it's supposed to be hard. It's supposed to test presidential attributes, one of which is to plan ahead and look over the horizon, and another of which is to staff up with good people. That's what the first thing a president does is staff the government with about 3,000 important policy-making positions. So in that sense, the rules are transparent. They're out there. They vary. And it's hard work. I'll say something about Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan didn't just take Paul Ryan out of the mix today. He took out dozens, scores of people because they have not, by the Ryan principle that he enunciated, they have not entered the process.
By the way, he's also the chair of the convention.
Correct.
So he has some say.
And he may particularly have taken out the man who, if he had not run in the first place, John Kasich, would be the white knight waiting in the wings. The reason I say he took him out, when Ryan says it's important to have entered the process, then how the process measures you becomes important. Cleveland Spiders were a National League baseball team in 1899, and they hold the record for futility. In 154-game season, they won 20 and lost 134. They had a better winning percentage than Kasich is going to have at the end of this. So by the Ryan principle, Kasich is moved aside.
Can you top the Cleveland Spiders?
All right, so who knows what's going to happen. All right, so we got a story out of the and you probably already heard this, but the county is nixing or stopping, according to the Sun News, Kiki Vigil, Sheriff Kiki Vigil spending cap. So, which they described as seeking after the fact approval. But anyway, what do you think is going to happen here with, you know, Mark D'Antonio? What do you think is going to happen with Kiki? Well, there's a few years between Kiki's election and last election and the next coming one, but there's a lot of criticism outside of the department. I've heard criticism inside the department of people who are frustrated with what's going on, the political process, and feeling like that the sheriff needs to spend more time focusing on the county itself. So just wanted to mention that. Now, back to national politics, and I mentioned, today is due James Dickens, who's running for the DA, and that race is coming up here pretty quickly. But we've got a lot of, it seems to me like we've got a lot of moving parts out there. We've got a lot. I'm just looking at the Drudge Report right now, and they've got a picture of Hillary with her eyes wide open. There's a lot of things going on right now that it seems like a time of transition, a time of revolution. And I think that we as human beings seek stability, and that's one of the reasons life is so difficult, right? Because we're seeking stability. We want to know, you know, where we're going to work for our life and who our friends are going to be, and that we're going to have health and get married and have kids, and nobody's going to have any problems. And the experience of life is the exact opposite of that, which is that the more time goes by, the more things are typically thrown up in the air, and you've got to make all these adjustments to survive. But I'm looking at the political process right now and thinking that I don't, you know, I mean, there's got to be something that happens to the two parties. The Democratic Party, which is spending its time laughing and finger pointing at the Republicans, which is kind of symbolized by Frankie calling up and laughing into the phone. We see that the Democratic Party in some ways may be in worse shape than the Republicans, because you've got two candidates, both of them probably you would argue are compromised from the get-go. Hillary's got this investigation and a lot of people hate her guts. So they're looking into whether she's going to get indicted. Chances are, as we've said on the show before, all things being equal, she won't get indicted. And the president has already stood up and said she's done nothing wrong. So he's entered into this as a basically as he always does. I mean, the president is only a politician. He doesn't really seem to understand anything else. But I could see that the president might even give her a pardon, you know. But between a socialist, a real live socialist, which most people have never seen before, and Hillary Clinton, I don't see that that party is in a healthy state. On the alternative, at least the Republicans, if they're fighting to get rid of Trump, do you see the Democrats fighting to get rid of Hillary or fighting to get rid of Sanders? I mean, of course not. The Republicans have more vitality than the Democrats have, but at the same time, you know, the Republicans need to grow. They need to take this opportunity to evolve out of this really ridiculous situation where the party elites get up and say the elections don't matter. What the people want doesn't matter. What the party elites or, you know, and it's what makes it even more hilarious is then the elites get up and they make fun of the term elite and say there is no such thing. As you heard, Megyn Kelly is part of this elite class, as she's a top-notch anchor, And, you know, these top people get a chance to, even the anchors get a chance to affect public policy and who gets elected. And you've seen anchors and journalists one after another go after Trump and thinking they're going to become a great person in their community by knocking Trump out because Trump is this so-called hated person. All right, we're going to take a break on the hour here. I put a bunch of science stories together for you, but we've also got some Glenn Beck stuff going on, and I got a bunch of weather. I guess I'm not going to. I'll probably end up saving the science for tomorrow. Got some weather, got some Glenn Beck, and then we've got the guest coming on. I was planning today on doing a little expose on ancient prophecy in terms of pagan prophecy, not the ancient Jews or Christians, but the description of what it meant to be an ancient prophet. And I'm wondering if maybe, you know what I think I'll do? Because I've got some books, but I've got to spend some more time getting into them. I think for next Weird Wednesday, I'm going to do a segment on what the ancient ideas were on prophecy, what they believed was happening, who the prophets were and the soothsayers and the diviners and stuff, how they went about their business. I thought it might be kind of a little bit fascinating for you people who like things a little bit off the beaten track. Kelly O'Connell, 6:59 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE 523 1450 and 805-6180. We'll be back at some point. James Dickens running for DA will show up as well. Be right back. I'm alone on your street on a Friday evening. Let me hear all of the day. Going nowhere with no one to go. I'm going to go take in the waters of a little rock of twilight daughter. Not the strip of monograph bookshelf, I'm coming to the back of Dickie's room, have a good look. Old wine of tongues with dust in the sign. Thank you. at 7:06. Today is the 14th. And according to my my little app on my phone, the temperature's gone down 4 degrees. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's I think it said 51 at the beginning of the show, and now it's 47, but it may have just been updating itself. Some of the top stories for you. Kobe Bryant calls it a career. He puts in 60 points. In the meantime, the Warriors, the Golden State Warriors, have set a record for the number of wins in a season, 73 on the very last game. Corey Lewandowski, the campaign manager for Donald Trump, he is not going to be sued, or he's not going to be prosecuted for touching Michelle Fields. Now, I told you before when I looked at the video on the while I was on the air and just kind of watching, tracking it, this guy comes up and apparently touches her. You can't really see him touch her, but you know one thing that doesn't happen, she doesn't turn around, and she's in a big crowd, and so supposedly he grabbed her arm or whatever. And I think it's just another feminist who's coming after Trump, and it's amazed me how many different people have thought that they can get rid of this guy. And she's got her own agenda, but I don't believe that she was assaulted in any meaningful sense. He might've touched her, might've grabbed her arm and said, don't go up to Trump or whatever, but it wouldn't have been an assault that it wouldn't have been something that you would have seen and said, oh my gosh, call the police. You would probably not even have noticed it if you were in the crowd. I'm sure you wouldn't have, because she doesn't turn around. All right. So, other stories I'm looking here. There's a story that I probably should do something about it tomorrow. They've got this enzyme that they believe will, and they've been testing it on plants. They believe that they'll be able to pull oil out of plants, usable oil. So that would be certainly be able to address what is going on, whatever the current state of the petroleum industry is. All right, here I've got a little bit of a weather for you. Major flood threat, including severe thunderstorms, targets plains Friday into the weekend. So in some parts of the country, we've had kind of a little drought, but in other parts like Louisiana, the entire state, and from Dallas over to the right, across the eastern Texas, we've had one thunderstorm and lightning storms and twisters and stuff. Just one after another. All right, check this out from weather.com.
There's been a lot of severe weather down to the south and a lot of rain. Frisco, Texas. There's a look at rain from earlier this week. Now, unfortunately, we are looking at days of rain setting up through the plains and some severe weather. So moisture is going to continue to build from the Gulf, and we're going to see a lot of elements that are going to play into severe weather potential, especially by Friday. So,
just to let you know how this map is going from northeastern Arizona and southeastern Utah across the top of Arizona, the top of New Mexico, from about Albuquerque up and into Colorado, but especially in Wichita and Amarillo and Midland in the panhandle, it looks like very from thunderstorms to severe thunderstorms. That's what the map looks like.
This looks to be the highest threat, right from the northern plains down through the southern plains. Severe weather likely, can't rule out isolated tornadoes. But the bigger picture here is the prolonged rain that we are going to see, not only through the weekend, but look at this, even into next week. So we are talking a lot of rain in a short amount of time, 5 to 8 inches in and around the North Platte area. We could see an additional 3 to 5 in parts of Texas.
Now, I had already pointed out to you that I went through and started adding up the rain totals for Dallas and Houston and such, and these are record-setting. The last 12 months is record-setting. So each each storm that we get. And I mean, we've never had, since I've been here that I can recall, a storm that dropped 3 to 5 inches of rain in this area. They're getting it all the time in Dallas. I don't understand it. But anyway, they're 20 to 30 inches above normal, if you can imagine that. Imagine that. Double or triple how much we get in a year, and then that is how much they're over it. All right, here's a snowstorm that's supposed to pound into the Rockies and High Plains.
More snow on the way for the Rockies, and it looks like we could see up to a foot in and around the Denver area. Wasn't that long ago we had our last big snowstorm. Now, this is all due to the blocking pattern that we're seeing across the country. So west of this, that's where all the active weather is, and it is going to make for a pretty decent setup for some snow. So this starts to get going by early weekend. We will see snow all the way down through Colorado. So Denver looks like you could get a decent amount of snow. See that swath between Cheyenne and Denver? That's where we're looking at some of the highest snow totals. So through Monday, Denver, 7 inches likely. We could see up to 23 inches in Idaho Springs.
And really, that's up to 2 feet of snow for a great deal of that area. Now, in this forecast, as you know, there's heavy rains that are going to be coming up through the Panhandle and over into Dallas, Oklahoma City and such. And then also on the West Coast, over through Montana, Idaho, Northern California, Washington, Oregon, over into Wyoming, into Utah, you've got another rain and snow event and a great deal of wind up through to today, it looks like, and probably beyond. So in the meantime, in the Northeast, 20 to 40 degree surge in weather. So just a lot of, it's kind of fun to watch all these weather events. Now, something that is not as fun, and I've got a little more information here from AccuWeather. We're talking about a Zika virus threat that goes from two-thirds up California all the way across the southern states. It spikes up into the center of the country, and then towards the east coast, it envelops almost every state on the eastern seaboard. And also Mississippi, Washington, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, West Virginia, Massachusetts, et cetera. So it is the potential range of the Zika virus carrying mosquitoes. And it's a little bit scary. I mean, you heard about the guy that I had mentioned from yesterday that was that guy had gone through, had gone to, I think he was, he had gone to Brazil to help with his ailing father, and he had gotten sick, and supposedly, I don't really, see how this is possible, but he claims to have had a, experience where his temperature went up to 110. I thought, it, you know, 105, 106, 107, you kind of lose consciousness and you're dead. But apparently this guy lived through it, and he said he could feel his skin shrinking. I guess the skin on his face was kind of shrink wrapped from the heat, you know, so kind of a weird experience. But it is 7:15. We're going to take a little break here and come back and check up on our Glenn Beck watch with some really bizarre stuff. This guy never fails to just astonish me. And calling Ted Cruz a Moses-like character, we cannot understand the incredible pressure he's under. 7:15, Kelly O'Connelly, I'm Las Cruces, 1450 KOBU, 523, 1450, and 805-6180 to text. We will be back to get into a little bit of Cruz. And then after that, looking here on my list of stories, well, I don't know. I don't know if we'll even get through that far, but I do have science stories for you, a bunch of them. So we'll be right back. Mm-hmm. right. So a little bit from our Glenn Beck watch, which Glenn Beck has tied his wagon to a star, and his star is Ted Cruz, who Donna, if she is still out there, claims to be a statesman. He seems like, in terms of a statesman, who would you pick in history to represent this guy? How about Jacob, who was given everything by God and just still decided to steal it, right? To lie, cheat, and steal. So I guess if you're given something, it doesn't hurt to go out and steal it. But anyway, here is Glenn Beck complaining, nobody is taking me seriously, even my family.
Anybody who thinks that what we've been saying to prepare for, I was really tired last night. I was in a really bad mood, and my wife and I were laying in bed, and we were talking about all kinds of problems with the kids, kids in their school, and what they're doing and what they're not doing in homework. And I was in a really bad mood, and I said, I just feel like nobody's taking me seriously. Nobody's taking me seriously, even in the family. My kids aren't taking me seriously about getting an education. And then I might have snapped and I said, and nobody's taking me seriously about what is coming economically. We have got to prepare for a bad, biblically bad economy.
Again, I ask you, what is a biblically bad economy? Does that mean that the economy is inundated by grasshoppers, locusts? Are the oceans going to turn the season, the Great Lakes going to turn red? All right. So I'll ask you this again. I know this is irritating. I do have good friends out there, good friends in the city that are Mormon, but who is this guy is every day giving prophecies? Who's he praying to? You know, all right. Here's Glenn Beck. Okay. And this deals with the situation I was telling you about. I've got a real problem with these people that are coming along and saying, we're not only going to bring in Old Testament law, which is one thing, but we're going to bring in Old Testament punishment, which I understand the one might seem to suggest the other, but I've never seen any of these people, some of which are brilliant men, these people, Rush Dooney and Gary North and such, who are into Dominion theology, I've never heard them do any kind of an analysis on how the punishment, and this is extremely important, the punishment phase of Old Testament biblical law was done. They didn't like to put people to death. And so this idea that you're going to find a gay person and put them to death because that's what it says in the Old Testament, I mean, please have a little bit of intellectual rigor, when you're trying to apply this stuff. Anyway, I guess fortunately this is not the Old Testament times, but they didn't, from what I've researched, they did not go and hunt down all the gay people and put them to death. That just didn't happen. So anyway, here we go. Glenn Beck claiming Ted Cruz chewed out his staff for allowing him to appear at an anti-gay rally. Check it out.
Right before we started recording that, my daughter walks out of her house. She lives next door. She walked out of her house because everybody was in, 400 people were in the yard. And she's like, hey, Dad, just another day at the Beck house. And I said, you haven't met Senator Cruz yet, have you? And she said, no. And then she looked at me because she knew what I was going to do. And she beat red. And she's like, no, Dad, no, please don't. And I said, no, you should hear it from him. She has been asking me to ask because all of her friends, all of her New York friends are all like, look at this homophobic bigot. He speaks at this some church in Ohio where that guy, have you seen this video? It's horrible. This guy comes out and he's like, I think that I'm not saying that they should be sewn to death. I'm just saying God says that homosexuals.
We got it open for him, right?
Yeah, it was crazy. And actually, from what I understand, he didn't open. He said it like the day before.
Oh.
And so Ted wasn't even there and didn't know this guy. So anyway, my daughter comes up. I said, no, you should hear it from him. I didn't know the answer he was going to give. And I said, I had been saying to her for a couple of months.
By the way, the guy's name is Kevin Swanson. That's the minister who put this conference together.
So I was going to ask him, and I keep forgetting. And I said, but, I want to look him in the eye, as he says, and you'll be able to tell. So I say, come with me because you need to judge. And so I said, Ted, my daughter has a question. And she's beet red. And she's like, well, that, you know, that speech you gave right before the preacher, immediately he knew what it was. And he said,
Ted Cruz is like Moses. Of course, he immediately knew what she meant.
Okay. First of all, that guy was reprehensible. Reprehensible.
What is Ted Cruz really going to get up, stand up and say, I believe that gay people should be stoned to death? I don't see that as a way forward for his campaign. All right. So here is Glenn Beck saying that nobody understands the Moses-like burden that Ted Cruz carries. Did Ted Cruz take a few days off and go to the top of a mountain and bring down some new laws by any chance?
What we have to understand is while we look, as I do, I watch him, I watch him on stage, or I'll watch him, you know, in debate, and I'll be like, Ted, you should have done X, Y, or Z. Yeah. But I'm not carrying also the burden that he's carrying. And I will tell him, you know, from Mike Lee, the burden, these guys actually believe it like we believe it. And imagine being in a position to where you believe it. You believe the country is at the end. You believe that God is telling you, step up to the plate. You believe that you, just like Moses, may be slow in speech and not the perfect guy. But you know, you, if you get in there, you can actually do something, and you've tried to stay loyal. Do you know what that life is like for 2 years? Of tearing yourself apart, of, please, Lord, just tell me, just tell me, just tell me. I'll do it, just tell me. And the burden of, I blew it. Oh, my gosh, I don't want to be them. I agree
that it would be a tremendous burden to be the new Moses. Whether Ted Cruz is the new Moses remains to be seen. But here's a little analysis from, this is amazing. From Alex Jones, check this out.
The cult leader, Glenn Beck, I mean, he is now a official religious cult leader, and he's the false prophet, and his messiah is Ted Cruz. You know, he comes out and says that Drudge is anti-Christian now, and I'm crazy, and that I've diseased Drudge's mind as if I have any influence, and that he's not a good source of information anymore because Glenn Beck said so. Aspartame admittedly makes you go blind. It's in Diet Coke and thousands of other products. It's been proven. It's admitted. It turns into wood alcohol. And Beck said he was going blind. So I wrote a story and all the medical links to it with Paul Watson a few years ago and sent it to Beck and sent it to Drudge. And Drudge linked to it under the story about Beck going blind, trying to help him. And Glenn Beck made fun of it on air and said we were idiots the next day. That's the type of cynical, twisted weirdo, as Kurt Nemo wrote it, that we're dealing with here. I know the inside baseball on Beck. I'm not going to get into it, but he'll end up destroying himself. I mean, he is an egomaniac, super narcissist, probably psychotic in my view. And he's insane and wants to be a cult leader. And Drudge has shown that. And so now he's anti-Christian. See, if you don't support the prophet, Moses' return, you didn't know? In fact, the two prophets of Revelation, it's Ted Cruz and Glenn Beck. You didn't know? He says he's a priesthood he's starting. Oh yeah. Oh, really? The liberal hardcore shock jock that was hired right before 9/11 and gotten ready to come out to be the synthetic Alex Jones. I mean, I've been told that by the executives involved, where they sat, and he's an actor, and watched weeks of my videos and shows and said, take this and mix it with Oprah. That's what I was told by the executives that used to run his operation. He's a mixture of Oprah Winfrey and Alex Jones, all in a big, weird doughboy's body. A cult leader. A Nelly high priest. Scared to death, by the way. Dozens of security people. And he thinks he can dictate what happens and who operates. And now Ted Cruz comes out and demonizes the Drudge Report.
All right. So I take it that Alex Jones does not approve of Glenn Beck anymore. We'll take a break here. We've got James Dickens, who's running for DA, in the studio, and we'll be back and talk to him in just a second. We have some local news, and 729, it is almost 50 degrees out there, and AM Las Cruces 1450 KOB, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in at 805-6180. We will be right back at about 7:30 on the hour.
Over the border, the hour before dawn, moving in lines through the day.
Well, it is 7:33. It's almost 50 degrees outside, and we have James Dickens, who is running for district attorney, with us in the studio, and he is, I guess we don't have a lot of time until the election, but good morning to you, James.
Good morning, Kelly. I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to you and to your listeners.
Absolutely, and I think, I believe Mark is coming on tomorrow, and it's been a long time since he's been on the show, months and months, but anyway, how's the campaign going?
Campaign's going well. We're receiving a lot of support from the community. I've been walking door to door myself and my supporters. The attitude amongst the people who are out there to vote is very positive. They seem to be very encouraging about looking for a new direction for the district attorney's office and supporting my campaign.
Okay, and what kinds of things have you heard from people in particular?
Just that they're shocked by some of the plea offers coming out of the district attorney's office. A lot of the cases, the serious cases, the violent cases, the sex offenders, they just don't seem to be getting the punishment that these people seem to think that the cases deserve. And looking at them, and as we discussed last time I came on your radio show, I looked at some of the plea offers, some of the results, and I was pretty shocked as well. And so we all seem to be looking at this this administration the same way.
And do you have any particular cases in mind when you say that the people seem to be upset, they're complaining about the outcomes?
Well, even this last case where Mr. D'Antonio took it to court, he was one of the three attorneys that was prosecuting the case, where the woman was in the old folks' home, retirement home. She was basically a quadriplegic, and they pled the case halfway through trial, offering the defendant a substantial amount of prison time, of course, but there was much more that could have been obtained in that case. And so people were asking, why not, when you're halfway through trial, why not keep going? Why not push it through to the end and ask for the maximum on somebody who's going to sexually assault someone who's basically a quadriplegic?
And what was the outcome in the case?
Their outcome, I think, was a little over a decade of prison time, whereas they could have pushed it through and received multiple decades. So basically, for that person, it could have been substantially much of a life sentence.
Okay, and so have you, I guess, probably still know some people in the office? I mean, have you heard anything from the office at all? Or
some people from within the office have reached out to me. Obviously, I'm not going to give details or names, their job, if that's where they're employed. But the overall feeling in the office, again, is just sort of a lack of leadership. There doesn't seem to be the leadership from Mr. D'Antonio of deputies that's going to guide them down the road of going to trial more often, seeking those maximum sentences, really being advocates and voices for the victims here in Doña Ana County.
And so do you have any statistics or anything that you would point to in terms of what you think is going wrong, or you think it's summed up in these particular cases?
No. Because you can pull apart any particular case and sort of cherry pick a case and say, hey, this was a bad result, and that's really not a good bellwether for the administration. Everybody has cases that they lose. Everybody has cases that they have to plead for one reason or another. So I'd rather look at the stats of the whole office. So what I did was I pulled stats for Mr. D'Antonio's office and looked at the total cases, all the cases that we went through his office. And what I discovered was of the top count, the most serious count in each one of those cases since he's taken office, his dismissal, decline, acquittal rate is currently at 48%. 48% of the top count, the most serious counts, are simply being lost. And when I looked at that, I was shocked. So,
well, can you break that down for people? Because I think a lot of individuals would have a hard time knowing the import or the kind of the analysis of your figure.
Sure. What I did was every DA's office is required to keep a database of all their cases. So I pulled each case, magistrate district court case, that was a jury trial set for adjudication, and looked at those top counts. So the first thing that pops up is basically the decline. The cases that come in where the attorney says there's not enough evidence and they'll decline that litigation. And of course, every attorney has to do that. You shouldn't take every case that the law enforcement brings to you. The next is dismissal. That could be dismissal for multiple reasons. That could be dismissal because you've run a time limit. It could be dismissal because the evidence has been suppressed. It could be dismissal because you received a directed verdict, whatever. The court is dismissing the case. And then finally, of course, is the acquittals. You actually try it, you go to court, you lose it. So looking at those three, again, that's a 48% of that top count is just gone. They then pled down 15% of what was left to lesser charges. So instead of going for that top count for the most serious charge, you're putting it down to something substantially less. That was another 15%. So leaving only 37% of the cases as charged, people were convicted. So about a third. So you're looking at a third of the chance of a defendant being convicted of the most serious count.
Okay, but I mean, so what? How does this compare to, for instance, other regimes? People, the average person who doesn't spend any time in court and doesn't know anything about prosecutions, DA's office is not going to know. I mean, sure. Is this typical for the United States, for the state?
I looked at a couple other jurisdictions. The one I was really focused on was Roswell. And the reason for that, the 5th Judicial District, was it's roughly the same size of DA's office, same number of prosecutors, slightly less, but generally the same size. They were shooting at just over 20% of the decline dismissal acquittal rate.
And what is it here?
48%.
So that would be 2.5 times?
Just about 2.5 times. That's right. So something I started to look at. So I looked a little further. Well, maybe there was an error in those documents. Start looking at different websites. What I pulled up was the Administrative Office of the Court next. This is at nncourts.gov. And there's a statistical review. The courts keep track of their own cases. And what I discovered here in Doñana County was that in 2015, only 51 cases were resolved at the district court level by trial.
Oh, no. How does that – what does that mean?
Only 51 times were they able to go through the case and either get a conviction or an acquittal through the whole year of 2015.
All right. So we're not we're talking about 51 cases that were – tried to completion, whether guilty or not guilty.
That's correct.
So how does that number stack up?
Again, we look at Roswell, look at that other jurisdiction that's roughly the same size, slightly less number of attorneys. They went to trial over 168 times. So again, 3 times the number, even with slightly less attorneys. In Alamogordo, the 12th, where I'm currently working, we have a attorney staff that is less than half what Mr. D'Antonio has. And we went to trial 72 times. So again, less staff, half trial more. And so I think that's what we look at when we look at this, why they're pleading cases down, why the cases seem to be resolving for such a small number of years.
So what if they say, what if somebody from the office said, well, that's because we're more efficient at getting pleas and we're getting actually more justice, but we're going to trial less, but we're getting more justice for the people. What would you say to that?
If we didn't have a 48% dismissal rate on our top counts, I might agree with it. Everybody understands that as prosecutors, you've got to plead out a lot of your cases. Everybody understands that. But if you have this culture in the office of not going to trial, not taking the serious cases to trial, and defense counsel knows that, then of course the plea offers are going to have to be sweeter and sweeter and sweeter so that you don't have to go to trial. It's sort of like everybody's gone and purchased a vehicle. if you walk into the car dealership and you say, I love the car that's right there in front of you, I'm going to buy it no matter what. I won't go anyplace else. I won't walk away. Do you think you're going to get the best deal for that car? Absolutely not. That car dealer is going to jack up the price on it.
Sounds like the Obama style of negotiations.
Well, and that's what you have when you're a prosecutor and you aren't willing to step away and say, you know what, this plea offer is too low. I need it to be higher for justice to be served. And if that doesn't happen, I'm going to go to trial. I'm going to force the defense to do that. If there's not that belief by the defense bar, they're going to take advantage of the OCD.
All right. So sum up what you think the issue is on this with the DA's office right now.
Sure. I want a DA's office where the prosecutors are confident in their ability to walk into the courtroom, to stand in front of the citizens of Doñana County, and to present the case and to be advocates for the victims. If they're not able to do that, if they're not willing to do that, if they're not eager to do that, then what you have is cases led way too low. Justice is not being served and the victims are not being protected.
Did you ever bring your concerns to Mark?
You know what? I talked to Mr. D'Antonio very rarely. There is obviously a great divide between Mr. D'Antonio and myself.
But you guys are in the same party. You're both Democrats.
That's true. That's true. But I think our prosecution philosophies are drastically different.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. D'Antonio clearly believes that moving cases as quickly as possible, regardless of things at times as to the results, is more important and is closer to the idea of justice than I think taking your time sometimes and making sure that the maximum sentence, if it's appropriate, is served.
Okay, we'll take a break here talking to James Dickens, who's running for DA, and he's got some critical things to say about the current district attorney's office. We will be right back at 744 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in at 805-6180 to text. We will be right back. Here's a little bit of weather for you.
Most of our plans would have died on the ground where they lay. Waiting for orders were held in the woods.
Okay, so and we've got a phone call here. Thank you for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who is this?
Mary.
Mary. Good morning to you, Mary, and thanks for calling in. Hope you're well, and what's on your mind?
Well, I'd like to ask your visitor today. I've seen pictures on Facebook concerning him and his connection to Susana Martinez, and he was on, in her work when she was there, and also Amy Orlando, and also he worked with Susana Martinez for when she ran for governor. He was on her committee, and he was a registered Republican, and now he's a Democrat. What was your change of heart from going to being such a strict Republican and doing all that, and now you're a Democrat?
All right, hold on. Yeah, so what exactly is your question? It's kind of laid out a little narrative there. Are you suggesting that anybody who's worked for Susana is damaged goods, first of all? Is that the...
No. My question is what made him change his political point of view from going from running being in the Republican Party, now he's in the Democratic
Party.
I got you.
Okay, hold on a second. If you ask a question that's too long, it's impossible to answer it. So you want to know why he switched parties?
Yes.
James.
That, and I've had that question raised before, and I appreciate the question.
Was it a Obama speech that persuaded you that?
No,
State
no.
of the Union, or
no? It was as with everybody's major decisions in life, something that was a long time in coming, and actually multifaceted. Certainly not something I can answer very quickly, but I'll give you one example of an issue that was near and dear to my heart and caused me to sort of reconsider where I was going and what the political views were. And that is the mental health here in Doñana County. My second child, my son Zachary, was as a very young child diagnosed with autism, or a very similar disorder. And with that, after my wife and I recovered from the shock, from the heartbreak of that diagnosis, we, my wife, being the amazing, strong, brilliant woman that she is, she dove into doing research. She dove into, well, was there any way to address this? Was this a basically a life sentence for my son? And what she learned was that, in fact, there is hope, and, but it requires daily work. It requires an immediate response. And with that, it also requires, obviously, a great deal of input from experts in the community. And luckily, at the time, we had a mental health system that was there for my son. And I'm happy to say today he's recovered from that through all of the hard work of those therapists as well as my wife. So when I see politicians sort of play political football with our mental health system, it's shocking to me. The thought that there wouldn't have been a vibrant mental health system available when my son was in that depths of that diagnosis shocks me. So I have great difficulty with the idea that we're going to shut down mental health systems, that we're not going to fund it. And again, sort of the overall and overarching idea that we aren't people who simply stand on our own, we're a community. And that was one of the big reasons I switched parties. And I did that switch back in 2012, 2013, I think it was 2013.
Mary, okay, so did you hear James's answer?
Yes, I did. So the rose-colored glasses you were wearing when you were with Susana Martinez when she was running for governor, those rose-colored glasses now are off.
I certainly have a different perspective as to, again, a lot of the ideas that I held when I was a Republican. Gun control, immigration, but mental health, again, is the one, because it affected my son, my wife, myself, is the one that really comes to mind when I think of one of the reasons why I did the change. You also mentioned the photographs of that have been sent around by Mr. D'Antonio and his supporters. Those are old office parties from 5-10 years ago. I don't remember when, but clearly they're old ones. I love the smile I had in those photos because back then, before my right side of my face was paralyzed, I could actually smile on both sides. Now I cannot. But those are old photographs from office parties, not current photos. I haven't spoken to the governor maybe once in the last couple of years, and that was her calling to congratulate me on the adoption of our fourth child. We were blessed to adopt a child this summer. The governor called because that's near and dear to her heart and congratulated me. It wasn't something where I reached out to her, but that's the only conversation I've had with her in years.
Mary, was there anything else?
No.
Thank you.
No, that's all. Thank you.
Have a good day. All right, folks, if you have a question, it's helpful if it takes less than 5 minutes to recite, but good call, Mary. All right, we're going to take a little break and then come back and finish up with James, 752 and AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Kelly, we're going to 523-1450, 805-6180 to text. And if you get rid of people that go from Democrat to Republican, you get rid of Reagan, but also Trump. So be careful. We'll be right back.
France never came. By evening, the sound of the gunfire was miles away. I softly removed through the shadow, slip away through the trees. Thank you.
and it's 7:55, and we got James Dickens here. James, what do you want people to know about yourself? We got about 4 minutes here before the show ends. What should people know about you? You're running for DA. You've been an attorney, and you've been in the DA's office for many years.
That's right. I've been a prosecutor for 16 years. And I'm telling you, after a couple of years of sitting with victims, talking about what the horrible things that happened in their life, how it devastated them, what I want everybody to know is that I love being an advocate for those victims. I love standing up for them. I love being there, supporting them, letting them know that people do believe them and people do believe that they deserve justice. And I think that's one of the big reasons why I received the endorsement of the Las Cruces Police Officers Association.
But doesn't, I mean, clearly Mark D'Antonio cares about justice, right? Or why else would he run for the job?
No, I'm not going to look into his motives. I'll let him speak for himself. He indicated that he's going to come on tomorrow.
I believe, yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Would you come on and debate Mark?
I'd be happy to come on and debate Mark. I can't do it tomorrow. Maybe you could set up another date.
I wasn't inviting you tomorrow to debate him because I need permission. I don't want to do an
sure.
It's like a trial by ambush. We don't want to do a debate by ambush.
No,
but,
we don't.
But,
I'd be happy to. In fact, we had the interview, which is sort of a mini debate in front of the newspaper editorial staff yesterday. So I'd be happy to come on and debate.
He's got to agree to that as well. So how long until the race?
The early voting starts May 21st, and the actual primary itself is the same as the presidential, which is June 7th.
And so how do people get a hold of your campaign? How do they support you if they're interested?
Right, there's probably the easiest way is to go to my website. It's dickens4da.com. On there, there is ways to set up for emails, for support, for donations. So go to that website, sign up, indicate that you're willing to help out the group, and we'll be happy to have everybody we can.
All right, I'm sorry, go ahead.
You can also reach me at my personal cell, which is 642-7300.
If we've got about a minute and a half here, if Mark was here, what would you say to him if you did have a debate? What would be the chief most on your mind?
I think at most is how can we justify a 48% dismissal rate? This isn't a dismissal rate of cases he inherited. This is 48% just of the cases that he himself, his office, charged after the change in administration. So we've got to figure out how we can justify the rest of the county is going at in the 20s, and he's up there at 48%.
Okay, and well, we'll have to have you back on again, and I'd be curious what your reaction was to the whole situation with Chris Barella. We're running out of time, but I'm sure you'd be willing to come back and discuss that as well. Okay, James, thanks for coming on, and any concluding thoughts for the listeners? And there, I'm sure a fair number of Democrats listening in.
Absolutely. The number one thing is to get out there and vote. Let your voice be heard. Do not sit back. Do not give up what is your constitutional right to choose the people who represent you. And I'd very much appreciate your vote so I can change the course of this DA's office and be an advocate for the victims here in Dublin.
Thank you, James. Thanks for coming on. And folks, it is 7:50, almost 7:59. Appreciate you tuning in. Tomorrow we have Mark D'Antonio. And we'll have a good show on top of that as well. And we'll get a chance to bring a few of those questions to Mark tomorrow. But it's going to be a heated race, I guess, and as is fitting for the position. Thanks for tuning in. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. And we'll catch up with you tomorrow in 22 hours. Ciao.
The lines and the mist and the fields on our hands and our knees. I'm all that I ever was able to see. Fire in the air, glowing red, silhouetting the smoke on the breeze. All summer they drove us back through the Ukraine. Smolensk and Vyazma soon fell. By autumn withstood without.